Views and opinions expressed are not necessarily those of the staff or management of the Flavors of Northwest Arkansas podcast.
You can't do drugs before you come in and wait tables.
Yeah.
You MF-er, you shuck and oysters until I tell you to stop. Do you understand?
Ooh.
And I was like, yes, sir.
I'm going to admit something to you.
Uh-oh.
Until probably a year ago, we were flying by the seat of our pants.
They opened, yeah. And they didn't make it a week for service till they shut it down and reconcepted.
Yeah, I guess I did a lot of reading, and I guess I decided around that time that, I'm going to come back and be a chef. And so I think Anthony Bourdain had a big inspiration.
Sure.
I mean, mostly his writing before, even watching him on TV.
Welcome to the Flavors of Northwest Arkansas podcast.
The atmosphere was like a party.
Sure.
It was like what I used to hear about in the 80s with Bond Daddies and Little Rock.
Here's your host, John Engelman.
I'll always take a minute to chat with a fellow like yourself.
Ah, thanks, Lance. Welcome to episode 3 of the Flavors of Northwest Arkansas podcast. I really, really appreciate you being here. Before we get into this episode, I wanted to bring up a community issue really quickly. A friend of mine reposted an Instagram post from Bentonville Mercantile that said that the owners of the Peddler's Pub lost their house to a fire last week. In the post, it also says they lost pets and a car as well. Ugh. If you have the ability, please go support them and their business. I haven't gone yet. I haven't been there yet. But from what I understand, they've got terrific burgers, house pizza, and a big vegan menu as well. And I do see pie options. So please, please consider going. I know they'd appreciate it very much. Thank you. Now, for episode 3, we jaunt over to the bustling scene of downtown Springdale, where owner and chef William Mock is at the helm of the not-so-unknown-anymore French restaurant called Bienvenue, and what a background William has. Classically trained in New Orleans by some of the best chefs in the United States, the Crescent City became an increasingly hard place for a family of 5 to find a spot to live, so it was time to find a new spot. They ended up in Northwest Arkansas, where William worked a few places as an executive chef until he could finally open up his own fine dining restaurant, which took longer thanks to COVID. How did he end up choosing Springdale? He'll tell you. Also, what do they do for birthdays? I assure you, it's not something that you're used to. If I were to sum up this whole interview, it would seriously take 30 minutes. One note on this one, though, there is some explicit language, so please plan accordingly. Okay, I think we're ready now. Buckle up for some stories because we hear from William Mock at Bienvenue, and that's next, right here on the Flavors of Northwest Arkansas.
Teachers are dynamic leaders shaping a new generation. They bring a variety of perspectives from diverse backgrounds, innovating how they teach to prepare students for our fast-changing world. They're skilled experts, discovering a universe of solutions, telling stories, inspiring, mentoring, connecting cultures, leading by example. Teaching is a journey that shapes lives. Are you ready? Explore teaching at teach.org, supported by the U.S. Department of Education and 1 million teachers of color.
Okay, welcome back. We are in the friendly confines of the Bienvenue restaurant here in downtown Springdale with its owner and chef, Will Mock. I know as an owner-operator, you don't have a lot of time on your hands, so we thank you for your time today.
Oh, you're welcome.
Awesome. I'd really love to just kind of start off with your story. Where is it that you're originally from? Loaded question.
No, it's not loaded, but as far as how I identify myself and how so I was born in California, born in Los Angeles area, and I lived there for most of my adolescent life, and then my parents moved out to Missouri late as a teenager, and then I finished up high school and did a little bit of college there, And I traveled around inside the country a little bit, and then eventually ended up in Baton Rouge in early 2000. And then, and that's where I begun my career as a chef. So as a chef, I was there in Baton Rouge, and it became a time where I realized that this is what I actually want to do. I think I'm getting pretty good at it, and I'd like to pursue it and sure. whatnot. And so as some of my friends were going to like Hyde Park or go to New York or out to California, it just made sense that New Orleans is just an hour away. We'll just move there, and I'll start school there, and I'll start training there. So as a chef, I'm from New Orleans as a chef.
Gotcha.
And then, I was there probably a little over 15 years or so.
All right. Now, going back earlier, was there an aha moment where you're like, yes, that is what I want to do for a living?
No. So when I was young, there wasn't that wasn't a viable profession. You
gotcha.
Know what I mean? That
sure.
that was something that you did. And I think maybe even now. But I mean, back then, it's like when they had, when you went to in high school, you had the Army there and the Marines there, and you had different universities there, and everybody had to go to college. I mean, that's
the whole career day thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was, and it really was, it made it to where you got to go to college. And it's almost like you're not going to make anything of yourself if you don't and whatnot. And there wasn't a lot of emphasis put on trade schools. That was looked down upon, who wants
sure.
to be a roofer, who wants to be a plumber, you know what I mean? And so that's just how it was when I was in high school. It's not, luckily, I don't think it's like that now, but
yeah.
That wasn't a job that you were supposed to go do. And I think as much as chefs shit on celebrity chefs, they mm-hmm. do it all the time, right?
Sure.
But that's the reason why we get paid now,
Yeah.
That's the reason why people that are successful or the affluent society looks at us in respect.
So it's gone from more of a trade to kind of a rock star
yeah,
sort of thing.
Yeah, I think so. And it's not, but
sure.
But it was Food Network that mm-hmm. I think really, really started doing that. And whether we liked it or not, the Bobby Flay, the Rachel Ray, the Emeril. Emeril's on a different level. I don't want to put Emeril with those guys because he's legit. But those are the people that brought the attention to the profession.
Yeah.
And for good or bad, I think some of it flooded it with people that were not necessarily wanting the everything
sure.
that came with it. And then also I think there was a lot of predatorial style schooling that went with that. I think a lot of culinary schools popped up a little quicker than they should.
A lot of them popping up on TV too.
Yeah.
The 800 numbers to apply.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that was, you got, I know a lot of people that, they were into $50,000-$60,000 student loans to come out to make $10.50 an hour.
Good
you
gosh.
Know? And so that sucks.
Yeah.
But so to a long way to your question, the aha moment was one, I thought it was cool because I was coming up and I was watching the shows and also I hated school. I hated
right there with you, man.
I fidget a lot and I just not, I don't know.
Yeah.
I couldn't figure it out. And I was like cooking for my friends and I didn't have any money to buy my brother. He got married well before I did. He started his whole life. He's my younger brother, but he started his whole life earlier kind of than I did.
Sure.
And so I didn't really have any money to get him anything for the anniversary. So I would go get ingredients and I'd cook for him and have him, for a nice dinner and stuff like that. So I think the aha moment was when I finally got into a professional kitchen. And that was where it's like, man, I like this. I like the environment. I like what I'm doing.
Yeah, and what was that that first job in a professional kitchen?
Oh, it sucked, man. So I went and I looked for the I went to look for the nicest restaurant that I could find in Baton Rouge.
Okay,
right, and I found one. It's a little French restaurant. It's not there anymore, but it was off Government Highway, And I come in there and I put a suit on and
yes.
I go in there and I have a resume, I don't have shit on a resume. And then my chef, he's just like, what is this? And he just, this Swiss dude that was just really like, really rough around, you know what I mean? He's sure. just a really blunt person. And I'm like, well, what's my resume? He's like, what's with all the suit and this and that? And I'm like, well, I'm trying to get a job, you know? And I told him, you know, you have no experience. I'm like, no, I don't have any experience. I don't have anything. I want to do this, I think, you know? And then, so he tells me, he said, all right, I'll give you a shot. He said, bring a notebook and a pen. I want you to write down everything I say. You're going to need to wear non-slip shoes. And you start at 9 o'clock. And if you're 1 minute late, you're fired.
Boom.
And yeah. And it paid $6.50 an hour.
Yeah.
And I remember I still have that notebook floating around, but when you turn to the first page, it says like clock in, turn grill onto 350, turn on fryer to, you know, and it just yeah. does all that. And so like with everything, I go down these rabbit holes and so I wanted this bad. And so I just spent a lot of time learning and it didn't take long to realize I got to go somewhere else.
Sure.
I mean, it was a nice restaurant. You know, white linen, the servers wore white gloves and whatnot. It's
yeah.
Very classic French restaurant. But I knew I wanted more and I didn't know how much more it got. You know what I mean?
You mean you wanted more than $6.50 an hour?
No, it wasn't even really that.
I'm kidding. Yeah, but you wanted to progress.
Yeah, I became the sous chef and I got a raise to $7.50 an hour.
Yeah, man.
But I wanted to learn more about food.
Yeah.
And like I said, I didn't realize how much more it could go.
Yeah.
Until I stepped into the Windsor Court. And that was something else. That was a whole different.
And that was the first place or the next place?
So I was at one of Emerald's restaurants for just a few months.
Okay.
Oh, the next place. Yeah. So when we moved to New Orleans, I started school. And so I would go to school. I'd be at school at 7:30.
And this was a culinary?
It was a culinary school. Yeah.
Okay.
I'd be at school at 7:30 and I would get out of school about 2:15, zip on down because the school was uptown. In the Garden District, and I'd zip down to the CBD where I worked in the Warehouse District, and I had to get there by 2:30, and then I would leave about 11:30 at Gosh. Night, and then I would do the whole thing again.
Yeah.
And so, what I was, I just felt I was trying to make up for lost time.
Yeah.
And because you got kids that come in at this time when you're at that level, they're coming over from Belgium, they're coming over from France to New Orleans and whatnot, and you know, they're 17, 18, 19 years old. And now I'm in the later of the early 20s.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, if I'm like 23 going, it seems like now it seems ridiculous.
Sure.
But at the time it's like, oh, I'm so old. I'm not, you know.
Yeah. You got to fight.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Tooth and nail. So you make your path and how do you find your way to Northwest Arkansas?
That's a huge leap, but by the time Northwest Arkansas came into the picture, I'd been a chef at several places and done a lot of, you know, things in my career. I had an established career and at least a little bit of an established career in New Orleans, at least locally, you know. I had enough people that knew me, but it's expensive to
sure.
to raise a family there. And we lived in Lakeview, and it just...
So you were married at this time?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'm married. I have four children.
Okay. And you did before you came to Northwest Arkansas?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Well, so I've been married twice.
Okay.
So three children with first wife. And that's kind of how it... Man, before I started cooking, I didn't really do shit. I didn't do anything. I mean, I would just travel on a whim. I'd just go do crap on a whim. I didn't have a whole lot of guidance.
Sure.
And I found out I was having a kid and
laser focused.
Yeah. And I was like, oh shit, I got to actually do something for
right.
a living. And I've got to learn how to do something.
Sure.
I don't know how to do anything.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that's something that's awesome about, any of the craftsmanship, you know, whether it's laying bricks or wood floors or something like that, you know that if you go somewhere, you have a skill set that you're able to use.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? So it's pretty cool.
Yeah. And so
Northwest Arkansas?
The idea of Northwest Arkansas was you could actually raise a family here and continue your craft.
Yeah, but there was a few places that we weren't looking to go to Boise. You know what I mean?
Sure.
A couple things we were like, oh, well, maybe Austin, that's a cool place. You know, go to Austin, got a cool food scene. Nashville's coming up on the big time, you know, and go there. And I wanted to go somewhere where I knew that there was an upcoming food scene that I had an impact on. And so my brother lives in Fayetteville. Well, he's a Fayetteville police sergeant.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And so he's lived here as long as I've lived in New Orleans. So he's you know, he's been on the force and the police for 20 years.
So. Sure. Okay.
And so my wife is from Springfield, Missouri.
Okay.
I met her when I was on my Katrina hiatus.
Gotcha.
And so this area had family in it, you know? And I think Fayetteville does or did. I mean, this is almost, this is about 8-9 years ago.
Okay.
And they do a really good job at promoting themselves as one of the best places to live, you know?
Of course.
And you see it a lot. So anytime you start looking up Fayetteville, and I didn't even know about Bentonville, to be honest. It was all about Fayetteville. And honestly, I thought the area was a little more compact. You know, I thought they were stacked on top of each other a little bit closer. But I got up here, come to find out Bentonville was the one that was moving it.
Sure.
You know? And it was hard. We had to start from scratch, you know. But I knew that one, I didn't have to pay for schools. Because I mean when you get into, man, it's just as they got older, they went to a French immersion school that was a charter school.
Okay.
We didn't have to pay for that. But the next step coming out of once they start coming out of elementary and going into junior high, man, and then into high school.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, it just gets worse and worse. And so we knew we weren't going to be able to live in our same neighborhood. We weren't going to be able to buy a house. I mean, you got lots, you know, they're selling lots for like $300,000. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I bought a whole house here.
Sure.
You know? Yeah. And so it was more sensible, you know, and it's like, if I can make a living, you know, and yeah, it's cooler in New Orleans. I mean, freaking New Orleans, you know. But sure. I wasn't gonna make a commute from like Mandeville or Slidell, you know, drive 30 miles across the bridge to go to work.
Oh,
every
that
day.
Bridge, man.
Yeah, it sucks. Yeah. And so if I wasn't gonna be able to live down in it, and it looked like that wasn't gonna be in the cards anymore,
sure.
Then I don't want to be in it.
Yeah.
You know, because it's not, man. If you don't live in New Orleans, that shit ain't worth it.
Yeah.
I mean, there is so much crap that you got to deal with. In a large city.
Gotcha.
And it's not just New Orleans, it's every large city, you know.
So what was your first gig in Northwest Arkansas?
I went to work for this is kind of a funny story. I went to work for a guy named Chris Moore at he was opening a gastropub called Foster's Pine Plate.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah, and it flopped bad. Like,
I loved that place.
Oh no. The place in general, I'm talking about the first week it was open.
Oh, I see.
So they opened, and they didn't make it a week for service till they shut it down and reconcept it.
Gotcha.
So
okay.
It opened, and they couldn't complete one service.
Wow.
Yeah, it was bad, like bad, bad. And this is a $2.5 million project. So, yeah. And so I got hired there to reopen it and get it fixed.
Gotcha. Okay.
And for the most part, I did. It was always going to be a difficult place to run.
Sure.
I think a lot of times people put a lot of emphasis on design and not function.
Yeah.
A lot of times, you know.
Yep.
And that clearly was, and also just not having a grasp of the concept. I mean, it's just simple shit. I mean, when you looked at it, and it's like, I mean, I could just quickly. This ain't gonna work because of this and this and this and this and this. I
gotcha.
Mean, it just very simple things that were just seem simple or logical to me, and it just wasn't to them. And so we got it back up and running. We were able to, I was able to get it up and running in 3 weeks and humming, and we were doing really well. And, but I hated it. Like, I didn't hate it,
yeah.
But it's just not for me. The casual, I don't want to work in a casual restaurant. I don't want to do casual food. And when we first started out, they wanted everything to, because of the catchwords, you know, the farm to table. The
right.
You know, I mean, when you have a restaurant that seats 300 plus.
Yeah, it was a big place.
You know, I had to have a whole team during the day working in a kitchen, and the kitchen wasn't big enough to do prep and service at the same time.
Oh.
So yeah, it was just tough.
That's brutal.
I mean, it's the way it designed, it was just so poorly designed. I mean, you've got a bar that only seats 15 people, but you need 3 people to operate it because of the way it's set up, and you got that long ass wall, and you got all this, like, it's almost
sure.
a football field between the well bar and out in the patio. And even
I hadn't thought about it that way, but remembering that place, it was kind of, I totally get it now.
Yeah. So it was too open.
Yeah. It was very open.
It sounded like a airplane hangar. And so we stapled carpet to the bottom of the seats.
Okay.
And we had to put acoustic tiles up and stuff just to lower that noise down.
Wow.
The kitchen was so open that
yeah.
nobody wants a kitchen that open.
Yeah.
They want to see some action going on. They don't want to see into your dish pit. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Right.
So we started covering up stuff like that. Just simple things like when you look at the beer cooler, that beer cooler is so awesome.
Yeah.
It was bigger than most people's walk-ins, double most people's walk-ins,
crazy.
Right?
Yeah.
And it was just 83 taps.
Taps
right?
So, all the way down.
All the way down.
Yeah.
But simply like, and then they would be sitting on like the left-hand side, all the kegs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And all the taps came out of the right-hand side.
Yeah.
So the lines would go up through flow meters and up on top of the ceiling and then come
Lord.
Back down and over. Instead of just simply putting the fucking kegs on the other side of
the
wall.
Right behind the wall, yeah.
it was just shit like that. And so when I left, it's like, man, I was the chef and the general manager.
Okay.
I started to be a chef, and as we worked through it, I had kind of like the keys of the city.
Sure.
And I didn't want them keys, man. I want to do fine dining. I want to do what I'm doing now.
Yeah.
And it's just like, okay, so it was time for me. And we tried to open up Bienvenue right after Foster's.
Okay.
And we were just working with a group that, like, we weren't the priority. Right, they had other things going on, and we weren't the priority.
Sure.
And it just kept getting pushed off and pushed off. To eventually, I was like, I gotta find a new job.
Right.
Right.
So, next step in NWA.
In at Carnal Hall.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, over
Heck
at
yeah.
And that was more of the type of, you know, I'd worked at hotels, and that was higher on the list and more of what I'd like to do. And it was. It needed a lot of work.
Okay.
I mean, I think the place for the most part had a good reputation. I don't know how, you know? I mean, it was horrible when I first walked in.
Wow.
I mean, it was bad. And basically I had to I just had to scrap that whole thing. And I told him, I said, man, I got 2 sous chefs that I need to bring in. I have a new team. I need everything.
Like, yeah.
Like we need in order, if you guys want this to be better than it was,
yeah.
and to the level that you want it to be, this is all the things I need for it to happen.
Important stuff.
Yeah, and it was mostly just, it wasn't like I needed them to buy a bunch of stuff. I needed them to, one, we need to staff for the, you need to staff for the business you want, not the business you have.
Right.
Because if you staff for the business you have, you're not going to increase it. You know, it's just you're not going to be able to keep up.
Sure.
We need to have standards, and we need to hold that accountable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if cleanliness standards and service standards and
sure.
everything. You know, and then being able to just have like an adult in the room. You know, you guys, you can't do drugs before you come in and wait tables. You know what I mean? It's just like, I'm sorry, dude. You're just not going to be able to do that anymore, you know? And so
you get in and get to work.
We doubled their food and beverage that first year.
Nice.
And then I don't know the exact numbers, but we got hit with COVID, right?
Of course.
So I was there 2019. We doubled food and beverage 2019. COVID happened. And then 2021, we were actually up like 20% from 2019.
Wow.
And then 2022, we were up like 30% from that.
Goodness.
Yeah. And then so we made it work. I mean, we were doing a lot more volume, a lot more, and we were doing some big time events, and it was pretty cool.
That's what I was going to ask. What, you know, obviously you got to kick it into gear somehow, some way, and you did it with events?
We did it with not saying no.
Okay.
And so how it kind of worked, they had a really good sales team and a really good event coordinator and whatnot. And they did a really good job. But previous chefs, there was a lot of pushback. No, I can't do this. Too many people this, too many people that.
Yep.
And so I spent a lot of time in banquets. And yeah, it we were like, oh no, we'll do it.
Yeah, it's
what,
great.
What is it? We'll do it. We'll stack two of them on top of each other. We'll do it. We were in it to where we would have like dining room service. We'd still have a event going on outside. We have an event going on in this room. I mean, we were just going, and it really did. We overextended ourselves pretty good. We were kind of burning on both ends, but
sure.
It was more of a pride thing that we didn't turn down stuff.
That's great.
You know?
Yeah. And it's an attitude that, needs to happen in all businesses and all places.
Yeah. But I think you can go too far. You know, I think that if you're not taking care of your workforce and your team members, you can't just grind them into the pulp without putting some investment into them.
You know? Totally true. Well, I'll tell you what, let's take a break real quick. When we come back, we'll talk about why downtown Springdale.
Okay.
The opening of Bienvenue and getting it together and getting it going, and we'll get into the menu. Sound good?
Sounds good.
All right. We are on location here at Bienvenue in downtown Springdale, and more when we come back right here on Flavors of Northwest Arkansas.
As an organ donor, your story doesn't have to end. The good in you can live on. In fact, you could save up to 8 lives and restore sight and health for many more. Sign up right now online as an organ, eye, and tissue donor. You'll be happy you did. And just maybe, someone else will be happy too. Go to organdonor.gov. It saves lives. U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration.
By the way, please, 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 please be an organ donor. I know I say it every week. You may be tired of me saying it, but I'm not ever going to be tired of saying it. I know some folks fast forward through the PSA that just played, but it's really important. I am an organ recipient. I have an organ in my body that was not originally mine. You guys know that by now. Organdonor.gov. Please just visit the site. Take a look. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And welcome back.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, good. Appreciate you letting us be here. Before we get into the menu, want to talk a little bit about the opening and securing the location of Bienvenue here and why downtown Springdale? And that's a lot to ask.
Yeah, no. it wasn't originally going to be in downtown Springdale.
Okay.
We were looking at a couple different places, and they just didn't work out for just different reasons. I think if you have an unlimited budget, you can kind of stick it wherever you want to go. But we weren't that, you know. And it was like one of those things where I knew what kind of restaurant I wanted, so I knew I had to keep shrinking it until I could afford it. I just barely afford it now. But but I knew I wanted something nice, you know.
Right.
And so I couldn't – there was a lot of areas that had restaurants, but the spaces were too big or it wasn't just going to work out or the – you know, and we really tried really hard to put it in this area in West Rogers, and we've worked on that for almost a year trying to get that deal done, and it just didn't come to fruition. And so at that point, I'm already in this, like we have it all set up to start building a restaurant. I just don't know where it's going to be now, and I think it was a little bit of hubris that I was like, well, if it's good enough, we can go anywhere.
Sure.
You know. And so we, I reached out to a couple people that knew around Springdale, and I met up with a gentleman that owns a lot of these properties, and he started taking me touring some of them, and I saw this place, and there was nothing here. It was just a shell. There was two bathrooms. It was the bike shop outgrew it, and they moved next door.
Sure.
And so it was just a blank canvas, but it already had a lot of things to it as far as a floor.
Yeah.
running water.
That helps.
And bathrooms. And so I could see I could see it, and I got some graph paper and started designing it into this building. And we actually, I said we, like, my sous chef and my general manager, we actually started building it. And we had to get professional contractors.
Well, of course.
And we have a good friend that he, his name's Brandon, and he's starting his own remodeling and building company. And so he took the design and a lot of things we didn't know how to do any of it.
Sure.
But he would like start us out and we would be able to finish it. Like he would,
That's helpful, man. Yeah. How great is that?
Well, yeah. And I mean, he worked it too, you know, he was working it, but we knew we were on a time crunch. And so like he would work his other job during the day. He would come in at night and start nailing everything together and start planning all out and start doing it. And then we'd come in the day and start finishing up for him. So like he would start us on tile and he would show us how to do it. And then we just kept doing it. So there was nothing here. There was all this board and batten, all the, like this wall right here, we had to paint it to look like the brick color. And then we had to put the plaster over it. And then we had to smear that in there. So that's not a wall that just was naturally like that.
And for people listening, he is pointing to the wall right next to us, just as he described. Sorry,
yeah,
go ahead.
Sorry.
You're good.
But there was nothing here. We didn't know how to, like I said, we didn't know how to make any of this. The bar right there, we had a lot of those pieces came from a reclaimed architectural store in New Orleans. Wallpaper, the tiles, all that.
Sure.
So ran around town on the internet, sourced it, built it.
Yeah.
And now we have a restaurant. Yeah. And it's been tough because you can't hardly find the place. You know, it's a cool location, but right now it looks like a war zone's going on because they've got construction on all four corners of us. I mean, downtown Springdale is just going crazy.
It's blowing up.
Yeah. And we are just like, nobody can find the restaurant, you know, and nobody really knows who I am. And nobody, I mean, this was a risky move.
Sure.
You know, thinking that like, well, if it's good enough, people will figure it out and come in.
Yeah.
And they have. I mean, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And I will say Springdale has been super welcoming, like overwhelmingly welcoming. And I'll say, because this wasn't my first choice. I don't think this is many people's first choice, you
know? Of
course, yeah. And starting to change now. There's a bunch of people. We got like four restaurants right now moving in.
Yep.
And so that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah,
and, yeah. And so I thought it was, man, I just kind of leaned into that because this is a place where I think that we can have the biggest impact, mm-hmm. or I can have the biggest impact as a chef. Because it's hard to figure your way out into Bentonville, Fayetteville. I mean, mm-hmm. it's just a different. You know, I think Elliot does a great job down there, but he'd been down there so many years, you know, because he came over from Theo's.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Springdale. Then this could be like my place.
You're gonna be one of the restaurant elder statesmen of downtown Springdale.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. And so that was cool, man.
That is cool.
And
really
so
cool.
As I get older, I want to try to kind of lean into that.
Heck yeah, man. Absolutely. Well, let's talk a little bit about the menu. We were talking earlier before we started recording about prep time has got to be crazy for you because you've got all the stews, you've got all the proteins that you break down. How early do you guys start? Like overnight?
We don't have a walk-in.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, and we have a freezer that keeps ice cream.
Okay.
We'll freeze a couple things. Like we find that fresh pasta is easier to portion in its nests. Fresh pasta is easier to for us. It's easier to cook if it goes into the water frozen.
Okay.
So after we make the fresh pasta, and then we run it through the dye to make it whatever shape that we want it to be.
Of course.
If it's not stuffed, because the stuffed pasta doesn't do as well because we have usually have a mousseline in there, and it'll expand and it'll crack. But with the fresh like noodle style pastas, it's easier for us to put it into the freezer, so it doesn't get bound up and
sure.
stuck together and yeah. whatnot. So we have a single door freezer that is a low single door freezer.
Sure.
So if you can imagine, it's probably the same size as the freezer you have at home. And so we have that, and we have...
The only freezer we have at home is on the fridge, so...
No, that's the size.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah,
okay, yeah.
That big.
Okay, gotcha.
No, not the deep freeze, man. I'm talking about, the little one.
Yeah, for sure.
It's small. And so so we don't have a freezer, and we don't have a walk-in.
Okay.
And so, yeah, we have a lot of prep to do.
Yeah.
And we don't buy, I don't know, we don't buy a whole lot of pre-made things.
so, that's what you're getting to, gotcha.
Yeah. And so it's just a bunch of raw ingredients. And so, it takes a long time to prep this stuff. But what we do is it's a small kitchen,
okay.
right? And we're only open for dinner. And we're only open 5 days a week. And so what we try to do is we try to put so much effort into the back end of it to make things happen faster in the front end.
Absolutely.
And so, unless we start having some problems, we don't really have long ticket times. We don't have a problem with food consistency, and it's because we've already taken it, we've seasoned it, we've portioned it, we've it's all lined up for us just to start going.
For sure. Well, that's amazing. I mean, it's that's awesome. I know we talked a little bit about this beforehand too. The best restaurants, the most successful ones, seem to be the ones that take advantage of what's fresh locally, seasonally, and sometimes that makes changes on the menu as well.
Yeah, and it's a lot of it's bullshit. I mean, it's when people talk about this hyper farm to table, things like that, it's like, no, you're not. You're like, it's fucking 30 degrees outside. What's growing right now? There's nothing. And so, those restaurants, like, if they're in Napa and they're in Florida and Louisiana, so they got produce all year round.
Sure.
But it doesn't always happen like that, you know? And so
what
I try to do is I try to get the best ingredient. You want to keep seasonal because that's how people feel, Sometimes I know that my menu, when I first started out, it was a lot heavier. It was more of a fall style menu, and I got some pushback from it and a little bit of feedback that it was a little, because when we opened in August and it was just brutal hot, and so some of the stuff was a little heavy, but the reason for that is because I didn't know when we were opening. We signed the lease in November.
Oh gosh,
we didn't get our the permits were great. Like, the permit guy's just right across the street.
City right there.
Yeah, but trying to get the architects, we didn't get the architectural plans back on just this little, like,
gosh,
just the kitchen.
Wow.
We didn't get those back until the end of March.
Woof.
So we signed a lease in November and the end of March, and then it just was one thing after another. So I had already revised the menu four times.
Jeez.
And so at some point, I'm just like, this is the menu. This is the opening menu. I don't know what I'm not gonna change it again.
Yeah.
And so so to your point, people want to eat a certain way seasonally, just because I think that's just a tick in them. What I mean? When it gets colder, you want more heartier. Mm-hmm. You want more comfort, and when it's hot, you want fresh and you want tangy and you want the change from a December to January, because there's not much different in climate. It's pretty much the same thing.
Yeah.
But your December menu, people want way different things in January than they want in December.
Yeah.
Because December, you're still in the quote holidays. You're
for sure.
You're selling things that have to do with turkey. And then in January, better not serve turkey.
No. It makes sense. I hadn't thought of it that way, but that's.
So my approach is I want to get the best ingredient I can get.
Yeah.
It it may not be from Arkansas.
Yeah.
You know, it just might not.
I get it.
It's going to be from wherever it is that the best ingredient comes from.
Yeah.
And so I would like to use as local, if there is local, sure. I want to get it. Like our shrimp, we get our shrimp locally. Blows people's mind.
Where?
Yeah, like 15, 20 minutes south of here. There's a guy down there, and he has a aqua farm. It's a salt. So he's raising saltwater shrimp in Arkansas. And when we order them, like when I get them in on on Thursday, he pulled them out of the water Thursday.
That's so insane.
Yeah, it's so insane that, and a lot of people don't realize this about seafood, but seafood actually does have to age a little bit. Like the freshest, fresh seafood, there's not a whole lot of flavor yet. It takes a little bit of time to develop that flavor. Now, of course, most people are aware of what happens if you spend too much time.
Yes, yes.
And your seafood goes bad. But when you're talking about shrimp that's hours old,
yeah,
doesn't taste like anything. It's just that clean.
Yeah,
you know. So that's one of those things where it's like, okay, I am getting the best ingredient I can get my hand on. Right,
fresh Arkansas shrimp. It blew my mind.
Yeah, it's crazy, right?
It is insane.
But when it comes to like black winter truffles, I'm probably not going to get them from Oklahoma. You know,
right.
I'm going to try to get them from Burgundy.
Yeah,
and so it's things like that. Yeah. And there's actually a food hub coming in right down the street that they're building, the Walton Foundation. It's part of the Walton Foundation. And from what I gather, it's to take a lot of local food and a local growers and farmers and ranchers and whatnot and kind of pull them all together into one centralized place. From what I understand, they're going to have like delivery drivers available, salespeople available. They'll have incubation kitchens for people that like make pies and sauces and whatnot and classrooms for entrepreneurship and whatnot. So being right down the street. I mean, we're just a few blocks away from that. So that Oof. Should be pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So at least when the growing season in Arkansas is available, right. We can grab it, you know?
Right. For sure. That's awesome. Looking at the menu earlier, there were a couple things. I always ask this question. This may not be the case here, but I know you have influences with the food that you have in your menu. Curious if any of them are like old family recipes or anything like that.
No, my family sucked. No, they can't cook. Well, my grandma was a pretty good cook, and she was in the industry and whatnot. My mom, I always thought my mom's cooking was better than actually it is now. And like, yeah, I guess I remember it better. No, I would. These weren't necessarily family recipes, but they are definitely technique that that I learned from my mentors and my chefs and man, honestly, what I do is I take things that already I know they taste good. What I do a lot of dishes. There's a few in there that are clearly I'm like, well, I hope this works.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
But for the most part, I take things that are already going to taste good.
Yeah,
and we do them correctly. We have the philosophy in our cooking. We mm-hmm. have a philosophy. It's every ingredient has the same culinary value.
Okay.
So clearly they don't have the same financial value.
Sure.
You know what I mean? But as a culinarian, the Brussels sprouts are just as important as the filet mignon.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And so we make sure that we do each and every ingredient correct.
Right.
When I made that leap from the little French restaurant, you know, to it was at the Windsor Court Hotel, which at the time, it was the only five-star, five-diamond hotel of the South. I mean, it was...
Wow.
And I was not ready for that. Yeah. I did not realize how... I mean, you know, we had $30,000 truffle budget. And just understanding the detail and the precision of what we were doing. And I was so out of my fucking league. I mean, it was so... I thought I knew how to cook before I got in there, and I just, like, it sucked. It really was the hardest freaking job I've ever had since. Hardest job I had up until that point, hardest job I had since.
Wow.
And, but what you learn, mm-hmm. you know?
Of course.
And the way the system, they don't have, like, saute or grill or whatnot. That you have very item-specific stations. You have achimitier. All that is... all they do is vegetables. You know, that's what you cook. You have a you have saucier, you have gros gardon, you have grand manger. I started as an entremetier and then moved to a poissonnier, which is fish chef.
Okay.
And so but yeah, in the beginning, my job was peeling asparagus all freaking day, and peeling pearl onions, and then when they start moving you to be able to do the amuse-bouche, which is a just a, like a little gift when you first get there, right? And sometimes that involved me extracting soft-boiled quail eggs, the yolk from soft-boiled quail eggs, with a syringe, and filling it with a truffle foam.
Oh my god!
And not breaking the white.
The egg white, you know?
Yeah. Peeling grapes, peeling strawberries. It was nuts, yeah. Right? But I mean, you learn
you'll
how to
never,
do that,
and never forget that.
Never forget that. I want to. not everybody has, you know, in the luxury hotels, and I don't know how it is now, but back then especially, it was an amenity, and so yeah. To have a restaurant like that, no restaurant around here could have. We had 11 people to work a shift where we would do like 60 covers.
Yeah.
And that's not even including the pastry kitchen.
Golly.
So yeah, we had three on each station, and then you had chef, sous chef to expedite, and nobody can afford that.
No.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's
and
a lot.
So, and you can't afford to take a case of vegetables and go, not good enough, good enough, good enough, not good enough, good enough, good enough. And I got in a lot of trouble with that with my next chef, you know?
Yeah.
He ridiculed the shit out of me for throwing away vegetables that I didn't deem appropriate.
As well he should.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, this is still pepper. This is still pepper. Like, you would just get pissed off. You
yeah.
Know, because
of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, again, looking through the menu, you know, the beef short rib, bourguignon.
Yeah. And that's.
I'm a little bit of a carnivore, so.
Well, that's beef bourguignon. That's a, yeah. That's a very. That's a French staple.
Yeah, man.
You know, and so what we did was we refined it. And so how you would make normal bourguignon, and a lot of these dishes, I know very well how to classically make them. My after the Windsor Court, I went to work for a man named René Bajou, and he's a maître cuisinier Centre de France. He was one of the few French master chefs living in the United States. I know how to make beef bourguignon, you know?
Yeah.
But it was he did a Haute-Touraine cuisine, which was, he had a refined history, but this restaurant that I went to work for him at, he went back to more of a homestyle roots. It was very unrefined.
Okay.
Big on flavor, but food always has to look good, but sure. He didn't want it to look like it did at the Windsor Court Hotel,
or
at the Four Seasons. He was an executive chef at the Four Seasons in Beverly Hills and in the Four Seasons in Maui. He didn't want it to look like that, you know. And this was homestyle.
Okay.
And so beef bourguignon homestyle, it's all in one pot. It's called pot of food, which is one pot meal. So you brown your meat, add your bacon lardons and your onions and whatnot, and then you put in a some flour and then you put in your red wine and you cook it for hours and hours and tastes awesome, but we wanted to refine this. And so we take short ribs, we take all the ingredients basically, and we cook them, and then we start introducing the rest of the ingredients separately.
Mm-hmm.
So even with like a cassoulet, which is done all in one pot, right?
Okay.
And that's how you're supposed to cook it, because you put all your aromatic vegetables and your stock and whatnot. When we put those in the stocks, we put them in with it's called a bouquet garni, which is cheesecloth. So we put all the onions and carrots and herbs and black pepper and everything. Sure. We put them in these like beans in this case, and so it gets the flavor. But then when we strain the beans out, now we have the beans separate, and then we add in fresh, perfectly diced ingredients into that.
Sure.
So it has the flavor of the long cooking, but it has the visual effects of the speed cooking. And so with the Bourguignon,
I feel like you told me to bring a pen and a notebook and start writing. Sorry, go ahead.
No, it's all right. So like with the Bourguignon, we cook the short ribs separately.
Okay.
You know, we braise them. Yeah. We cook them in red wine for several hours with aromatic vegetables, and then we pull them and we let them cool. And that allows the red wine to come back into the back into the beef a little bit, and then we portion them out, and you know, we take them off the bone and whatnot,
sure.
and take any kind of sinew or any of the stuff that you're not going to want to eat.
Yeah,
you know. And we portion them up, and then we put them in a bag, and we seal them up with red wine jus, which red wine jus is on a different thing. It's like, well, the sauce that we use for steaks, which comes from a demi or a veal gloss or whatever. It's
okay.
Some roast veal bones and cook it and reduce it down. And then separately, you have a bunch of red wine, and you reduce that down, and then you marry the two together, and you have this gorgeous sauce. Well, that basically tastes like Bourguignon anyway. So you shove it, you take the sauce, but it's more refined. It's clear.
Sure.
It's not cloudy like Bourguignon is. It's very clear. It's okay. Very, very refined sauce. And then when we put that into the bag with the short rib, we have now created Bourguignon. And then so we seal it up, so when we go to serve it, we put it into a water bath, 155 degrees, and let it come up in that sauce. And then when we go to plate, we're able to put in all the cool things that are cooked separately and now put together on a plate. And so you're able to eat them and enjoy them like they were all cooked together. You know, so on this one, we have a pomme puree, which is like a very smooth, it's a very smooth, silky kind of mashed potato.
Yeah. You know?
It's a milled potato with a whole lot of butter and a little bit of cream. Yeah, you can actually, sometimes it actually breaks like a sauce would, because there's so much butter too.
Gotcha. Yeah, of course. Separates, yeah.
Yeah, and then the Bourguignon, or the short rib Bourguignon, and then we have these really pretty baby carrots.
Sure.
And then some baby beets and mushrooms and whatnot.
Awesome. Awesome. I you know, I could go over the menu like for the rest of the day but I have to ask about one thing. I can't think of anywhere else in Northwest Arkansas where you can get a duck magret.
Magret duck.
Magret.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And I might pronounce it wrong. Maybe. I don't know. that is, those are the breasts from foie gras duck.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah. I just, like I said, you know, I've looked at a lot of menus and I just, man, that's something. What, how did you come about that for the menu and you know,
duck, et cetera? It makes sense to have duck in the fall.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And I put off putting duck, cause we had a lot of requests for like duck confit and whatnot. I put it off because I wanted it to be in more of the fall. And
yeah.
So when it came out, I don't know, it's just something we knew we wanted to use.
Yeah.
What I think is cool about, I don't know if it's just Springdale or it's everybody in Northwest Arkansas, but, a lot of things that we put out, they eat. And like, I didn't know if escargot was going to sell. It sells like crazy.
That's awesome.
I didn't know foie gras was going to sell, and it sells like crazy. And so it's so cool that I don't want to be dumb with it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to push the boundaries too far of what I think people will eat, but
yeah.
I think it's awesome that they're what would assume adventurous,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Listen, I mean, this whole area is changing.
Yeah.
People.
I mean, we don't have oysters this weekend because some Thursday and Friday just went to town on them.
Went nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was I'm trying to lean more towards seafood anyway. I think as I get older, I just kind of like don't want to kill as many animals. You know what I mean? So
yeah, I understand that.
So I'd like to, it's hard to get seafood here, but,
sure.
And so I need to sell more of it to be able to sell it. Does that make sense? You know?
Yes. Yeah.
You can't just order 5 pounds of something and have it flown to your door.
Yeah.
So yeah, the more I can, you know, so right now when we order seafood, we're ordering these really nice scallops. We have mussels, we have octopus, we have striped bass, we have crab. Now we have some crawfish. It's take or leave it if that's seafood or not. But all kinds of ingredients, and that helps us build a truck so we can get it shipped out here.
Awesome.
And yeah. And you know, get to the guests
for sure. Well, like I said, we could continue talking about the menu forever, but I want to get into the experience, you know, experiential or restaurants that offer an experience in addition to food are all the craze currently. And one of the things that you guys do is pay special attention to birthdays.
Yeah. So when we built Bienvenue, the design of Bienvenue, we wanted it to be timeless. And so when we tried to do more of a mid-century modern in the decor, we wanted more of a vintage in the artwork. We wanted white linen. We wanted the servers to have a tie and a black apron. And the reason why is because I don't think that if that was going to go out of style, I would have done it already, you know?
Sure.
And when I got to Northwest Arkansas, this place clearly had a fucking taste and a brand, you know.
Yeah.
All the restaurants seem to have, you know, two word names, you know, this and that, or this plus that, or cup and pitcher, and all the just the different, you know, hat and coat and whatever it was, right?
Sure.
They all had the two word names. They all had the exposed wood shiplap or a cedar. They all had the matinee style lights. They were all trying to serve all their cocktails out of a mason jars and stuff. It was just clearly, you know, and on certain days you could hear an acoustic guitar there. But when I wanted a place that was one, we weren't going to be able to keep up with the trend. I mean, you can't build a whole restaurant around a trend. It's cool that experienced restaurants are what's in style, but you know, I came from a city that have 100-year-old restaurants,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so I knew I wanted it to be timeless, you know,
for sure.
And then the only way I know how to make this work is that we, you know, I don't have a large advertising budget. I don't have a PR firm. I don't have a lot of things that a lot of the Bentonville restaurants have. And so I know that the only way I can get this done is to make sure that each and every guest is taken care of.
Yeah.
And then hopefully build from that. And so that's the only way I know how to grow the business. I don't have a marketing team. I had to learn all that, all the marketing we do. I had to learn all that shit.
Yeah.
Like myself, you know, books and podcasts and stuff. So to your point about the birthdays.
Yeah.
Right. So we wanted to acknowledge people's special day. And so we make sure that we write them a note about it. We make sure that we make them a little gift. What most of the time it's flowers because the other way is like give away a dessert. That's, you know, everybody does that. And I have a pretty expensive pastry chef. I don't want to just keep giving away his stuff. And then, so I wanted to acknowledge that, you know, I want them to know that we know they're there. Right. Every day. Actually here in less than 2 hours.
Yeah.
Right. 4 o'clock. Our servers come in. There's a bunch of stuff that we have to do. We have to iron the linen. We have to polish the silver. We have to polish the glasses. Water the plants. A bunch of stuff, right? But every day, 4 o'clock, we have lunch. We have a staff meal. I think it's important for us to eat dinner together.
It's great.
It helps us bond, and they don't snack on my food all day. You know what I mean?
There's
I can just
too.
Go ahead and yeah. cook for them and sometimes we splurge. Sometimes we'll go get tacos and whatnot, or pizza or something like that. But we always make sure that we have some food together. And then we go over each and every reservation. We just down the list.
Awesome.
At 5:30 we have Mr. and Mrs. Subabuck coming in with two people and we put the if we have news on them or information on them, we build that through the especially the repeat guests, you know, coming in. They're going to like certain things. And, you know, we have one gentleman that he always orders a double oyster plate, you know, and this and that. And so we know when we see him in there, we're like, all right, may as well go. You know, as soon as his reservation's at 5:30, hey, man, 5:15, start shucking oysters, dude, and get them open, you know.
Nice.
And so that all helps us more of a pamper and hone in a guest experience, you know, to make sure that we're the place that they like to come to.
Awesome.
So we got, you know, more comfy chairs and, you know, try to make it, you know, we only have 40 seats. And so there's not a lot of turning in this restaurant,
right?
You know, so we need to make sure that we keep our guests here, you know.
And part of that, and you and I were talking about it before we were, you know, before we hit record, a little bit about the servers and the industry and what else you're planning and trying to do here.
Yeah, so this, our foundation of the restaurant, I can cook good food, man. A lot of people can cook good food. And man, I think barbecue, that's awesome. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And you think barbecue, dude, you gotta take time and skill on that. But when it comes down to the service of a restaurant and the type of restaurant that I want and the type of industry that I want to work in, that's the foundation of this place. It's not, the foundation of the place is not the food. The foundation of this place is I want to create an environment where people are proud to work here. I want somebody to how do I phrase this? So when I was at Foster's, you know, it took 50 people to run that thing. I mean, it was just crazy.
Right.
And you know, you had all these different personalities and you had all this different just you know, front of house people and back of house people, and just all the debauchery that you would think that happens in a restaurant.
Sure.
Right? And I was just like losing my mind. I didn't know how to control all these guys, and it's just the same stuff from you know, working in experience, you know.
Sure.
I never really changed that. I always concentrated on how do I make my food better? How am I quicker? How am I the technique? And it wasn't until I was venting to a friend of mine. It became one of my mentors, right? I was venting to him about all the staff driving me crazy. And I was like, man, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know how, like, what am I doing wrong? And he actually explained to me what I was doing wrong.
Wow.
He took a little Sharpie out. He started writing on this bright tank, which is like this stainless steel tank. And he started like showing me like little mathematical equations on how human resources work and how to treat people and how to run a team. And it opened up so much. It opened my eyes up so much that I was like, oh, that's how we're supposed to be doing this. And we're supposed to be doing this shit like that. We're doing this all wrong.
Yeah.
And people always talk about like, you know, would you give advice to young cooks? Oh no, don't do it. Don't get into it. You'll never see your family.
Right.
That's all bullshit, man. And the reason why I say that is because, when you talk about, cooks being burnt out because of the industry burn them out, or servers burned out because of the industry burnt out. They're burnt out. They burnt themselves out.
Yep.
You can't do a physical activity like this on the line, get off, go drink way too much at a bar until 3 a.m. and then do it back over again. You know what I mean? You're
right.
You're burnt out because you're just a burnt out person.
Yeah.
What we'd like to expand on this, but what we have created is a place that, man, we treat people with respect. You know, we're polite to them. We understand that there's a, you know, we don't get mad when they want to request off for going to a concert. Man, that's why you work, so you can go, you know, so you can request off. You know, we eat together. We try to.
You make it a family.
Yeah, but you gotta be careful about that, because a lot of places where they talk about, oh, we treat you like family, it's, I mean, they don't pay you very well.
Well, that's a buzzword too.
Yeah. What we want to do is create an environment that people want to be in.
Right.
No matter how much you pay somebody, you can't pay somebody enough money very long to do a job they don't want to do.
Right.
And so there is a lot of other ways you have to always look at, how do you compensate somebody? How else can you give them a benefit for being here? And what we would like to do is we hold this restaurant to the as high a standard as we can.
Yeah.
And we're still learning and growing. It'll get better as we
sure.
go. But where somebody says that they work at Bienvenue, they're proud of that, you know?
For sure.
As a as a cook or as a server or as a bartender or a host, it's something that they're proud of because these guys are making a decent amount of money, you know? And mm-hmm. and for I think that when you look at it, you think of them as like servants, or you look at them like you look down upon the industry or as beneath you and stuff like that. And like, no, these people are they're not. They genuinely want to see people happy, you know, and they genuinely want to take care of people. And when you see somebody that's like one of our guests that's grumpy, man, you know, he's having a bad day. You don't know what happened to this guy.
Yeah.
Like you.
Sure.
You have an opportunity to actually. Yeah, it was a
turn that frown upside down.
Yeah, it's
sorry, that was. Stuff.
Well, there's a book out called Unreasonable Hospitality.
Okay.
And it's a great book. I recommend everybody go check that out. But he has a line in there. He said that we're not saving lives, but we get a chance to change them.
It's great.
You know, we can change the way somebody, you know, their mom might be in the hospital and she's not going to make it. They're just having a shit time. And we could provide them with a great experience. And just, you know, for maybe an hour and a half, they're not thinking about it too much.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we have a chance to affect people.
Sure.
You know? Absolutely. So it's pretty cool.
That's awesome. Well, let's tell everybody how to find you.
Good luck. So
let's start online.
Online, bienvenurestaurant.com. And I know, like, around here, Bienvenue doesn't just roll off the tongue.
Sure.
You know, I think you can just Google French restaurant and you probably will pop up there. We have, you know, our social media, our Instagram and Facebook and on TikTok. I don't know what I'm supposed to do with TikTok yet, but I guess we'll figure it out. But our restaurant is located, we're downtown right off Emma Street, and mm-hmm. and there's Shiloh Square, and mm-hmm. there's a little thing called Turnbow Park, and there's a little creek, and our restaurant faces that creek. It's really pretty. There's so much. There's probably going to be construction for at least the next year, but I don't think that people are going to have a hard time finding us once the square gets redone and once the bank building,
First Security, yeah,
First Security Bank mm-hmm. building. So I think people are going to be able to find us a little easier.
Awesome. Flavors of Northwest Arkansas. Find it on Facebook, Instagram. And email flavorsofnwa@gmail.com. Anything else before we jump?
No, I'm good.
All right, man. I appreciate your time. I've taken way too much of it. I lied to you. I said it'd take about 30 minutes or so, and this is very much or so. I can promise you that.
Yeah, and I got to get cut off, too, because you pour a couple glasses of wine, and, I mean, I got some stories.
Buddy,
and 20 years in New Orleans, man. I mean, or 20 years in the business, and a lot of it spent in New Orleans. There's a lot of shit happened.
Yeah, I don't have the stories, but a couple glasses of wine in me, and I'll run my mouth about other things.
I can promise you that.
Yeah, flavorsofnwa@gmail.com. If you have any questions or anyone has interest in getting on the podcast, I appreciate your time.
Thanks,
Chef. And remember, please tip your servers. Have a great week. We'll see you next week. Bye bye.